This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The world of children's movies can be a fantastic landscape. There are talking animals, flying houses, and toys that come to life. And children who watch these films truly take in all of the magic. But beyond the sparkle, there are many other messages your child is absorbing as well. Scholars at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill have found that many of today's children's movies are sending mixed messages about nutrition and body image. And these movies aren't just showing unhealthy eating habits. Overweight characters are often derided for their size in these films.
Oh, no! I've been abracadabbered into a fancy feasting second-rate sidekick!
At least you don't look like some kind of bloated roadside piñata. You really should think about going on a diet.
There's a clip from the film Shrek the Third. Eliana and Andrew Perrin have been pioneering this study on children's movies and nutrition at UNC Chapel Hill, and they join the program now. Eliana Perrin is a professor of pediatrics at UNC Chapel Hill School of Medicine. Welcome to you, Eliana.
Thank you so much. Thanks for allowing us to be on your show.
Sure thing. Her husband, Andrew Perrin, is a professor of sociology at UNC Chapel Hill. Welcome, Andrew.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. Eliana, tell us what inspired this research.
Well, so we know a lot about the health effects of movies when it comes to smoking, sex, alcohol. We know very little about the messages in movies that may be teaching children how to eat. And so that was what really sparked us to do this research.
Talk about the research, Andrew. How did you do the research itself?
Well, what we did, we divided each of the top 20 movies, 20 grossing movies that were rated PG or G, so the movies that were targeted to children and families. And we took these top 20 movies over a five-year period, and we divided each movie into 10-minute segments. And we looked for all sorts of characteristics of the movies, from exaggerated food portion size to sugar-sweetened beverages, to branded or fast food, to physical activity. And we also looked at stigma about weight and body size that was expressed in each of those 10-minute segments so that we could really get a sense of how much of each movie was spent on healthy versus unhealthy messages about obesity and about stigma.
And who is we? Are these you and other researchers, or do we have a panel of viewers? Who's looking at these films?
For this project, Eliana is the lead scholar on the project, and she organized it all. But the panel was a panel of scholars from, Eliana, correct me if I'm wrong, pediatrics and sociology. Were there any other departments involved in this one?
Not in this one.
And what health-related behavior, Eliana, were you looking for?
So basically, we looked to see whether portrayal of how children eat and whether they're active in the movies match the American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines for families. And so that was the original intention of the study. We also allowed people who were watching the movies, these researchers, to put in qualitative comments, essentially comments as they were watching the movies. And what we learned from looking at this compilation of data is that an overwhelming percentage of movies, I think it was about 70% of the movies, contained stigmatizing aspects about weight. And that was really surprising to us. We had expected to find perhaps unhealthy eating and characters watching TV or being sedentary. What we really were surprised about was the amount of stigma we found in the films.
Well, here's a clip from the film Kung Fu Panda, and this scene features Kung Fu master Shifu, and he is his slightly chubby panda Po.
You think it's that easy, that I'm just going to hand you the secret to limitless power?
No, I...
One must first master the highest level of Kung Fu, and that is clearly impossible if that one is someone like you.
Someone like me?
Yes, look at you, this fat butt, flabby arms.
Those are sensitive in the flabby parts.
In this ridiculous belly.
Hey!
There we go, there's a scene from Kung Fu Panda, so Eliana, tell us about that clip.
Yeah, well, it's shocking when you look at a clip like that to realize that this is, you know, what our children are watching. Basically, the Kung Fu master you may or may not be able to tell from the audio clip, is essentially whipping the panda in between each of those comments about that fat butt, flabby arms, this ridiculous belly. There are whips against the panda in between each of those statements. And, you know, it's just surprising to me as a pediatrician and a parent. You know, really, we're trying to teach our children so much about not bullying other children. We have programs in schools and in communities against bullying and stereotyping and stigma, and yet this is what we saw is the subject of humor and really everyday behavior in children's movies.
And Andrew, of course, the filmmakers are going to tell you they are just reflecting what's out there in pop culture, and that's what makes the movie popular and why people go, because they're reflecting basically values that are already abroad, and that makes it easy for them to do the film and for kids to identify, right?
Well, you know, I think they might in fact say that, but there's one of the things that we know about culture is that it's a two-way street, and that media in particular don't just reflect culture, but they help to refine and reinforce cultural values and attitudes. So, you know, I think more than put the blame on filmmakers in particular, what we want to do is think about what are the ways that children's movies could do a better job of reinforcing healthy behaviors and not stigmatizing people for body image and body size.
Of course, the other big question is how much do kids actually absorb in these films, and to what extent does this normalize the kind of behavior that's reflected? And Eliana, I think you've had some experience with your own children as well, haven't you?
Yeah, well, so Andy and I are husband and wife, and we have two children, and while we were doing our coding for the project, we actually had our then 8-year-old and 12-year-old watch the movies with us, and we gave them a coding sheet. We were coding on laptops, but we gave them a coding sheet, and we actually never really asked them what they ended up coding. It would have been interesting to see, but this was certainly the subject at the dinner table every so often with the kids. And one day our 8-year-old went to a birthday party, and he came home and he said, "Mama, that we saw a movie at the birthday party, and it would have been a really good one for your project." And I said, "Oh, how so?" And he said, "Well, in the movie there was a character who was eating a lot, and she was ridiculed for that." I think he probably put it "made fun of" instead of "ridiculed," but the point was very clear. In watching the movies with us and doing the coding, he was essentially taught media literacy, which is something people spend whole curricula on. And so I don't know how quickly kids could learn something like that, but that is really going to be one of the things that we investigate in our next project. And in our next project, we've pulled together several scholars from across the disciplines at UNC. It's a really fascinating transdisciplinary project, and we're really going to hope to get some insight from children themselves as to what they see when they watch the movies and what they take away, and whether they could be taught some media literacy.
Yeah, that would be the next big question, is exactly how much are kids absorbing this, and then does that kind of behavior become normal for them to criticize children and to ostracize them for their body shape? So so let's talk more about this question of media literacy. Do you think the answer, because the idea of petitioning filmmakers to make films that they will tell you will be less popular if they teach kids to eat their broccoli and like everybody, the idea of media literacy, the fact that kids are aware of what they're watching, they're critical viewers and not uncritical viewers, how big a step do you think that would be? Andrew, I'll start with you in providing a kind of corrective to what popular culture reinforces.
Well, I think, first of all, I do think that there's some good examples of times in which film companies have actually agreed to make changes in health messages in movies. Smoking is a really important example of that one. So I wouldn't give up on the possibility that we can change some of the content of the movies. That said, you know, the whole media environment is not going away, and I think you're right that a really important strategy is to teach kids and understand, both teach kids how to interpret the culture in movies, that's the media literacy piece, and also just to understand how they're interpreting it, particularly in the context of new technologies that mean that kids are not just watching a movie once from beginning to end, but they may be repeating specific scenes lots of times. They may, in many cases, kids, you know, learn all of the lines of a favorite movie. So the kind of saturation they may get makes it, I think, particularly important that we figure out ways that they can successfully interpret that information better and put it into a better context.
Yeah, I think it'd be very interesting to see the effect of social media in reinforcing particular parts of the movie and how much of it gets picked up by kids and then reinforced and what effect that has on their, again, internalization of these messages.
Sure, I think that's a good point.
Well, I want to thank you both for being on the program. Andrew Perrin is a sociology professor at UNC Chapel Hill. Eliana Perrin is a professor of pediatrics at the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill School of Medicine. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you so much for having us. Your show is wonderful. It's a real privilege to be on it.
Well, thank you both.
Thank you, Frank.
Coming up next, we meet Haben Girma, the first deafblind student at Harvard Law School. You'll hear that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.